Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
Okay, so let's talk about the actual performance of the work. So here's a provision that favors the general contractor dealing with obligations on the site. Neither the architect, owner, nor contractor shall be responsible for construction means, methods, techniques, sequences, or procedures of the subcontractor, or the acts or omissions of subcontractor, or the failure of subcontractor to carry out the work in accordance with the contract documents. So this is typically an obligation that the contractor owes to the owner that the contractor is attempting to pass on to you, saying, look, we're all big boys here, right? You have this scope of work, you're a professional, you're gonna do this work, and it's not my responsibility to make sure that you get it done. One of the things that happens in your, as you perform your work as a subcontractor, is that your work intersects with the work of other trades. And it's where those two items of work intersect is typically subject to a great deal of dispute. So contractors put a provision in their contract that makes it the subcontractor's obligation to make sure that everything comes together correctly. So it says something like, the subcontractor shall coordinate its work and cooperate with the contractor and other trades whose work might be affected by or interfere with subcontractor's work. In furtherance thereof, subcontractor shall participate in the preparation of coordination efforts and drawings as required by the contractor. The idea being, the contractor wants to say, we got all these people working on this site, we're going to try to manage you, but at the same time, you have an independent obligation to manage yourself, not just with your own scope, but the scopes of work that you interface with. So as a sub, again, always trying to limit your liability, one way to push back is to say, subcontractor's sole obligation is to perform the work actually depicted and described in the plans and specifications, specifically related to its scope and work and the work agreed to by the subcontractor. So that there's, you minimize any misunderstanding as a sub of what it is you are obligated to do and how you intend to perform your work. So what you want to do, ideally, is provide an addendum. And the reason you want to provide an addendum is because most contractors take great offense to actually marking up the contract. Legally speaking, it is all equivalent. There is no right or wrong way to do it. So if I hand you a contract and you scratch it out and you handwrite notes on the side, and then you and I sign that contract and initial all those notes to make sure there's no misunderstanding, that's a valid contract, and those changes are going to be the changes that control. Most contractors will not accept that. They like to take the position, we don't make any changes to our contract documents. Yet they will almost always routinely accept and or review and accept a negotiated an addendum. So when we are hired to review a contract for a client, that's what we do. We provide an addendum. So the contract itself is unchanged, and then we provide a 1, 2, 5, 10-page addendum dealing with all of these issues. So what it would look like would be something like a document. It would say addendum at the top, or contract addendum. It'll say, this addendum controls over the subcontract, right? Because we want these changes to take precedence over what's in the contract, subcontract. And then it would say whatever changes you want. Paragraph 7, strike the third sentence. Add, and then you would write whatever you want to add. So you kind of give instructions on how you're making the changes to the contract document. And then you would just run through the document so that as you read the addendum and you have the contract in front of you, as you can put the two together and you can see where the changes are made without actually making any changes to the document itself.
This episode is brought to you by CPVC FireSprinklerReport.com. With recent lawsuits alleging that CPVC fire sprinkler pipe is defective, contractors, subcontractors, and suppliers now have a place to get accurate and up-to-date information. Visit CPVC FireSprinklerReport.com to learn the latest and protect your company.
Okay, so let's talk about the subcontract price. How are you going to get paid as a subcontractor for your work? Most of the time, the contract price is listed typically on the first, maybe second page, and it has a statement that says something like, the subcontract price shall be paid in exchange for the exacting performance and timely completion of the work and the performance of any and all duties and obligations set forth in the subcontract and the contract documents. So, this isn't just saying you as the sub agree that in exchange for this price, you're going to do your specific work. It's saying, I'm paying you, subcontractor, for the work, but for each and every additional obligation that exists in this contract. The obligation to provide certain amounts of insurance, the obligation to handle all of the coordination, to do all of the work and accelerate and decelerate, provide multiple remobilizations, whatever exists in the contract, you are obligated to do for that price. So remember, all of those, let's call them soft obligations, things that may occur, they're not guaranteed to occur, but may occur, those all fall within your contract price. As a contractor, you want this. You want it to be very clear that you, as a contractor, are paying the sub for all of the obligations that exist in the subcontract, not just the actual work. We typically recommend, whenever possible, that the parties agree to a unit price schedule in addition to the lump sum, because change orders are inevitable. So a contractor, in order to mitigate risk and limit the cost of a job, should say, your contract price is X. But we agree that, you know, maybe there's 2, 5, 10, 15 items that are likely to occur during the course of this job, and we're just going to agree on a price for it now as a unit price so we don't have to negotiate it later. So it could say, the subcontract price and all unit prices shall be deemed to include any and all taxes, insurance, and bond premiums, storage, delivery, transportation, and overhead and profit. So if you are the electrical contractor, your lump sum price is $1 million, and we also have a unit price schedule that says helpers are this much, electricians are this much. A statement like this says, those additional prices, those are all in numbers for changes. I'll give you an example. We represent a drywall contractor who is in a dispute over whether or not certain change order or extra work and ticket work, how much he should be paid. They've agreed it's an extra. The contractor has agreed it's an extra. The question is, how much should a framer get paid an hour? How much should a drywaller get paid an hour? How much should a finisher get paid an hour? So now we're fighting over, is it 18, is it 24, is it 45? And that's that can be an expensive fight. This fight is over many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars, but it can get expensive to fight about that. So if you can agree in advance on those numbers, then you remove one issue from a dispute later. And again, every trade is different, right? So every trade's going to have a list of unit prices that may be You know, the electrician's unit prices are very different than, you know, a drywaller. Okay, so let's talk about payment. Most contracts between the contractor and the sub are going to follow a payment procedure that is equivalent to that procedure that exists between the owner and the contractor, because the contractor wants to manage his or her cash flow on that job, and the best way to do that is to make payments consistent with however he or she's getting paid by the owner. So on larger jobs, it's typically done via an agreed payment schedule, the AIA payment schedule. So what we see commonly, I'm sure you all are very familiar with it, is the AIA schedule of values, right? So that's a common way to deal with payment on a construction project. The schedule of values is typically not negotiated at the time of the contract, but there's usually a statement that says before the job starts or right after contract signing, the parties are going to mutually agree on a schedule of values. Schedule of values being when and how much are the when and how much is the subcontractor going to get paid for their work. Obviously, a subcontractor wants to try to front load it, right? Put lots of money up front. Early items get lots of weight versus the contractor who wants to slow it down. That's what's referenced in the schedule of values.
Thanks for listening to the LeanZone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forms on this and other construction topics, head over to theleanzone.com.